Hi, Dan. Thanks for coming on and kicking everything off for us.
You're welcome. Excited to be here. Thanks for having me.
Right. So you were the showrunner for Life on Our Planet. What is a showrunner? Is it simply that you run the show? So what was your involvement in the series?
Yeah, I mean, the clue is in the name. Yes, it does mean that I run the show. But effectively what that means is I'm in charge of the sort of logistical and creative sides of Life on Our Planet through pre-production, production, and post-production. So ultimately, that means it's my job to assemble the best team that we can to make the show, to design the creative, to come up with the narrative, and then to make sure that we are always doing things the best way possible.
Are you the boss? Are you running everything? Is this your show?
I suppose I'm the boss. Yes, I certainly think of it as my show. There are others who may disagree, Dave, but that's the easy way of thinking of it is the buck stops with me.
Well, I'll be telling everyone that it's my show, but hopefully they won't listen to this and hear otherwise. So what kind of day-to-day tasks do you do then? Because it sounds very, I expect it gets very stressful incredibly quickly.
It can do. I mean, my day-to-day has varied throughout the different stages of production. So at the very beginning, which we might come back to, my job was, as said, to bring along the best people that we could, both at Silverback Films, but also at Industrial Light and Magic. It was also to help at that early stage to design the story. We knew we were making an 8-part series about the story of life, but what does that actually look like? And then through production, it was really a case of just making sure that everyone could work to the best of their abilities, that they were always focused on story, on vision, on making things look as great as they could be. So, you know, it was quite a varied kind of role, differed throughout the 5 years that I was on it, but was mostly not too stressful. It got a bit stressful at various points during the pandemic, where we went from plan A to B to C to D to E and then back to A again. Mm. The most part was really good fun.
Yeah, I imagine, you know, like having the creative control and, you know, producing a documentary, it's like a dream come true for me. So I'm a bit jealous. Hopefully one day, maybe after about 20 more years of experience or something, I don't know.
Dream big, Dave. It's there.
PaleoCast, the series. Yeah.
Exactly.
Right. So how did the show get started? Oh, this is good advice for me. How did the show get started? Did you approach Netflix and say, I've got this great idea? Did Netflix approach you as Silverback, the production company, and say, hey, how about you make this for us?
That's a good question. So the show got commissioned before I started. And what actually happened was Silverback Films were midway through making the first season of Our Planet. Mm-hmm. And Netflix were really very pleased with how that was coming together. And at that point, I think they said, so what's next? And Keith and Alistair, who run Silverback Films, had always wanted to do a series about the story of life, but they'd always been apprehensive of it because it was clearly going to rely on VFX. Mm. But just about around that time, there had been a few significant steps forward in the quality of VFX. And I think examples include things like the tiger in Life of Pi, that for a number of years, people had been doing dinosaurs, kind of scaly creatures, really, really well. But fur and feathers had always been lagging behind until that sort of era. And that gave them the confidence to take it to Netflix. This idea that we could make a show about the story of life with that gives context to the natural world, has amazing VFX in it, and really has a strong storyline through it that Netflix really love because of that sort of binge-worthy concept. Mm. And yeah, by mid 2018, itself, after a year of R&D, they greenlit it and said, off you go.
Awesome. So then were you given free rein to make the show however you saw fit?
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, I think one of the things that I did when I first started was recognize, I suppose, that that life on our planet had potential to have a very, very strong story running through it. That I suppose it came to me quite early that the history of life is not some predictable walk through the past. Instead, it's a story of chance and chaos, of evolution, of revolution. In a weird way, it's nature's very own Game of Thrones. Except instead of, you know, the Starks and the Lannisters, we've got the dinosaurs and the mammals. And so with that idea, I then, you know, talked to Keith and Alistair, my bosses at Silverback, and to Netflix to say, we think we can make this a show that really belongs on Netflix, with dramatic openers, with a really strong story through each episode that ends with a cliffhanger. So it was that sort of serialization, I suppose, that I brought to the project.
Okay. Another thing that people will notice pretty much straight away is that it mixes CGI and natural history footage. So what was the reasoning behind doing that?
Yes, it's not a paleo doc, which I think some people might be surprised by. But as you say, it does mix VFX, the world from the past, with modern day natural history. And the goal of that really was to give life on our planet today context, so that people could kind of understand the journey it had been on. One of my favorite examples of that are when we're dealing with the amphibians. So amphibians evolved in the Carboniferous when, and this is a slight generalization, the world was more or less a giant swamp. So the idea of laying your eggs in water but living your life on land was brilliant, perfect adaptation. But today, 300 plus million years later, that can almost be an Achilles heel for them. And we illustrate that with the strawberry dart frog that's living in a kind of drying forest in Costa Rica that has to take its tadpoles on its back up to the canopy 50 meters above it to deposit them in a bromeliad that's got a little bit of water in it. And so we always wanted to focus both on the prehistoric world and the modern day to give it that context.
I think as a paleontologist, you understand that as well, that you can't look at the past without looking at the present, and you can't look at the present without looking at the past. The two are inseparable in a way. So it's really important, I think, and something that a lot of other natural history documentaries don't do. Well, paleontological documentaries don't do, and natural history documentaries. Yeah, yeah. Nobody's doing this, and it is so important to get that. I can't stress that enough.
Good. I'm glad you agree.
But then, you know, you've got the whole history of life on our planet. You've got biology multiplied by geology, you know, geological history. It is an insane amount that this series could cover. In terms of scope, how do you begin to tackle that? Where do you decide, like, this is the story that needs telling versus that's the story that needs telling when you've only got 8 episodes?
Well, with difficulty is the short answer. So I started on the show in mid 2018. And the first thing that we did when there were not very many of us, the team eventually became kind of 40 people strong. But at first, there were maybe half a dozen of us. And we started by trying to build the jigsaw, I guess. So we had a series of different colored post-it notes. One color was VFX creatures that we thought had an important story to tell. So, you know, the first animal to come out of the water, the first animal to take to the skies, those sort of Neil Armstrong moments, I suppose. We had another color post-it notes that were just really cool cult hero, cannot not put in, VFX creatures. We then had the same for modern day animals. We also had the same for the earth processes that were happening. All of this was all populated on a kind of massive timeline. So we had two walls of our entire office covered in all of these post-it notes. And then it was a question of really, really making sure that everything absolutely justified its place. So having built this massive wall of color, we then started picking notes off. And you only got to stay on the wall if your story was really, really vital. I'll give you an example, and that's Lystrosaurus. So Lystrosaurus was an animal that one of our researchers, Ida May, always wanted in the show. But she kept saying it's because he's kind of weird looking and he's a sort of proto-mammal kind of thing. I think he could be a cult hero. It's like, yeah, Ida, that's cool, but it's just not kind of good enough. But, you know, she showed perseverance and this sort of dogged determination, went off and I think talked to Mike Benton at Bristol, who enlightened her on this idea that the Lystrosaurus lived, he's almost the whole series in miniature, because he was basically a bottom of the food chain burrower in the Permian, bullied by everything left, right and center. And yet those attributes in a way helped the species survive the Permian extinction and then went on to inherit the Earth, almost literally. I think there was a time where 3 out of every 4 vertebrates on land were Lystrosaurs. And so suddenly he had the most amazing story to tell. So yeah, it was long and complicated, and often there were several moments of disagreement.
Of course.
Eventually, I think we got there.
Okay. So you did consult with scientific experts, and we're going to hear from a lot of those over the course of this podcast series. But how much of the show was led by scientific research?
That's a good question. So the science was always the tail that wagged the dog. So when we were putting up the post-it notes, again, it was the species that had a scientifically important role to play that featured. They were the ones that stuck to the wall and didn't get removed. And then once we had decided to feature those creatures, the scientific journey didn't end there. You know, science was what dictated exactly the way that animal looked, the landscape that it appeared in, and to a certain extent, the way it behaved. There were a few times where inevitably producers would want to take a story in a certain direction, maybe dramatize it a little bit more. But that's when our scientific consultants, led of course by Tom Fletcher, kept us honest. And I always said to Tom, no matter what the circumstances or what pressure you might be feeling, you can always say that we're not allowed to do something a certain way. And I think that collaboration really helped, actually. I think Tom sometimes found it quite difficult to put his head above the parapet and say, yes, T-Rex unfortunately is going to need lips. And therefore we're hiding the most aggressive, amazing banana-shaped teeth that it's got. But I think that gave the series the veracity that it's got.
Yeah, for sure. So thinking about the series as a whole, what do you want the audience to take away from it?
Well, that's a really difficult question, because there is so much, I think, that is amazing about Loop. You know, how life started, where life started, the amazing adventure it's been on, the fact that we're all related, all going back to Luca at the beginning, and obviously how incredible prehistoric life was thanks to industrial light and magic. But I suppose what I really hope the audience takes away is something that we deal with at the end. at the end of episode 8. So right now, life is at a tipping point, really, as we're entering the sixth mass extinction. And Loop showcases very clearly the calamitous events of the previous five. Yet, as we enter the sixth, there is a clear difference. This is the first extinction event to be caused by a single species, but it's also, because of that, the first extinction that can be stopped. So while I really hope the audience loves the roller coaster ride that life has been on, I hope that we're arming the audience with an understanding of what has happened in the past, which can hopefully focus people on wanting to protect the future.
Well, Dan, hopefully you'll join us at the end of this podcast series and we can have a look at things retrospectively there.
Yeah, I'd love to. And I hope you enjoy it, and good luck with the series.